WXCO, 1230 AM, W255DN, Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. The White House announces a one-month exemption for major U.S. automakers on stiff new tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico. CBS's Kelly O'Grady also reports.
This is a one-month pause, and come April 2nd, so frankly just under 1 month because this is March 5th, we're going to see reciprocal tariffs.
An appeals court allows the head of a federal watchdog agency to be removed as a legal fight over his firing continues. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
What that means is that there is no watchdog now for Donald Trump and what he's doing.
Near Girdwood, Alaska, three heliskiers are confirmed dead after getting caught in an avalanche and being buried in 40 to 100 feet of snow. KTUU-TV reporter Lauren Maxwell.
Avalanche forecasters here say conditions were dangerous in the mountains Tuesday and that they've had a number of human-caused avalanches in recent days. They also expect conditions to stay dangerous for some time.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News, your news roundup in a quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com.
The Bucks with a win in Atlanta. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the Hawks 127-121. Atlanta had the lead midway through the game. Doc Rivers asked about what he didn't like about the Bucks defense in the first half.
I just thought they got in transition early. They made two or three threes off our missed layups. So second half, I thought we were way better. First half, I didn't think. We showed video at halftime where first three steps we were jogging, they were running by us. Second half, we didn't do that, and we took that away from them.
College hoops. It's the Badgers at Minnesota tonight in the border battle. Marquette on the road at UConn. The Packers re-signing their free agents. First, it was linebacker Isaiah McDuffie. Now, kicker Brandon McManus gets a three-year deal worth $15 million, $5 million guaranteed.
You know, I'm happy that it's in the past now. I was hoping and working hard for another opportunity. I'm extremely grateful for the Green Bay Packers for giving me that next chance to come back out here and play the game I love.
That's kicker Brandon McManus with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Revel in the soul of New Orleans and the spirit of Mardi Gras with the latest Jazz at Lincoln Center Presents concert celebrating the New Orleans Songbook. Led by acclaimed pianist Luther S. Allison and featuring the soulful vocals of Keanu Linnell and Milton Suggs, this concert celebrates the legendary composers and timeless songs that define the Crescent City. New Orleans Songbook, coming to the Grand Theater Wausau Friday, March 21st. Tickets at grandtheater.org.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, Wausau's home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Kind of an important day. The Polity Project. These are the folks who rank and classify governments around the world. Are you a democracy? Are you an oligarch? Are you a non-democracy? Are you a dictatorship? Well, the U.S. government has been downgraded from a democracy to a non-democracy as of 2025. That has never happened before. Congratulations. I guess mission accomplished. Because this is where we were always going to go. Our country right now is a kleptocracy run by oligarchs. It's that simple. And relax. You knew this. This is what the Red Hats wanted. They wanted a king, a dictator. They wanted the oligarchs to take over. Because they had to. Because we told them all during the campaign that this is what they were going to get. In fact, the oligarchs, told them. Because they wrote it down. They wrote it down in a 900-page document. And I understand words are like kryptonite to the Red Hats. You write something down, they're never going to read it. So are we shocked? Are we surprised? Answer, no. In fact, I got to think they want more. So when I see this story coming out of Wired, that says that Donald Trump is, you know, making millions of dollars hosting dinners at Mag-a-Lago, you know, candlelight affairs with business leaders across the globe. I go, of course, for $5 million, you could have a one-on-one candlelight dinner with the president of the United States. $5 million bucks. That's evidently what the going rate is. What they also say, these candlelight dinners have guests who come in as well, I guess. For $1 million bucks, you can reserve a seat. Anybody got a problem with that? Now, I remember when Clinton got in a whole bunch of trouble for allowing people to stay overnight at the Lincoln bedroom. We're just now, it's right out in front. And I guess this is okay now. I go, you know, my mind is in this place going, I've been saying we're a kleptocracy. I've been saying everything is got a price tag associated with it. $5 million bucks for a one-on-one dinner with Donald Trump. And look, you know, he wants to sell gold cards to wealthy people coming for $5 million bucks. That seems to be his sweet spot. Seems to be what he's going for. Before his big speech, he had lunch with a bunch of TV anchors. Gee, you got to wonder, which ones? And this, again, is another one of those things of, you know, rewarding the faithful, the loyal, the sycophants. Keep them schmoozed and saying nice things. While what's happening to our country is not good. And I've been saying for a while that you get people like Elon Musk who are getting this involved, spending the kind of resources that he spent to get Trump elected. There's gotta be a payoff, and a pretty sizable one. And I go back to, and I've said this a bunch of times, my grandfather used to always say, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. If they're spending money, they didn't get to be rich by wasting resources. They didn't get to be rich by wasting money on frivolous causes. They understand if they spend a buck, they want two or more back. And in Elon's case, it's millions, well, it's billions back. Because we now find out, a Wall Street Journal is reporting, that the Commerce Department is, well, looking into possibly changing, you know, that Biden-era program, Biden, $42.5 billion program, the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, that was part of the infrastructure bill that was going to, or is supposed to, bring broadband to rural America. Now, this is you, Red Hats, because the cities are going to be fine. It's profitable for all of the big internet carriers, the Comcast, the Verizons. It's profitable for them to lay wire and to get cable wire into those areas. A lot of people. Getting out into the haystacks, a lot more costly, less profitable. And immediately I look at this, because I've talked about this broadband equity and access and deployment program in the past, as much like the Electrification Act of the 40s that brought electricity out into the hinterlands, out into the farms, out into the rural areas, along with plumbing. Had it not been for government action, they may still be using candles in parts of rural America. And I look at this as, okay, so you're going to kill Biden's $42.5 billion program. Who, oh, who could be the benefactor? And I wonder if this just happened. Because what Republicans are saying, you know, that Biden plan of running those wires all the way out there, it's just not feasible. It's not cost effective. You know, we should think of something that's easier. You know, like maybe like satellite broadband. You know, like Starlink, you know, like Starlink. You know, Elon's got a little thing, right? $42.5 billion program that was supposed to bring jobs to rural America by laying the infrastructure and bring high quality, high speed, low cost internet to those areas. Why do that when you've got Elon who can gouge them and, well, whenever he wants, turn the switch off and on? And you go, but Rick, they couldn't be this blatant about it. Really? You're gonna make that argument after all we have seen? And you go back to last Friday with the whole Zelensky dust-up, which I still think was an ambush by J.D. Vance. I think Trump tripped over his you-know-what, and this is where we are. But I do think Trump's been got. I've been saying that for a long time. I think Trump is a Russian asset. P-tapes or whatever. I don't know what it is, but the man's been got. Because to take the positions that he's taken, and then to have Hegseth and the Department of Defense saying, well, you know, we're not worried about Russian cybersecurity. And now you hear the reporting coming out from Reuters that Trump is asking for a plan to ease sanctions on Russia. You start going, I'm not quite understanding. And then you pile on top of that. The fact that Trump is moving on really the dumbest trade war possible, and that's with Canada. You go, explain to me why we're going after Canada? And I know, Trudeau had said that Trump wants to annex Canada. They want to destroy Canada's economy, and you know, he went on and said all that stuff. And look, I do think there's something to that a little bit. I don't really think Trump thinks he's going to get Canada as the 51st state, but it is one of those distraction points. It is one of that throw stuff out there, get people talking about this while you're doing that. And what that is leading us towards a recession. And this recession that's coming, and understand, Republicans all during Biden, we're saying recession's around the corner. Recession's around the corner. And Democrats never really fought back on that. I think we're going to hit a major recession very soon because of all the stupid, moronic, idiotic things that Donald Trump is doing. I think we're going to have a good patch of suffering because of his idiotic policies. But... and this is going to be the interesting part. He's going to sell it as the greatest economy ever. That, no, you're not suffering. No, there's going to give you the other to go after. It's Ukraine, you know, invading Russia that caused that to happen. You know, it's when China takes over Taiwan, it will be Taiwan asking for it. It's going to be up is down, back is forward. It's going to be all of the crazy that you expect from this administration and more. The question is, honestly and truthfully, do we buy it? Do the red hats buy it? And do Democrats get out there and give them a reason to find some sanity? Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, big shocker, we're making harassment and intimidation and discrimination great again in the workplace. And, you know, it's the Trump folks doing it. You knew. But are we surprised that the guy who told us when he sees a woman he likes, he moves on her like a you-know-what and grabs her by the you-know-where? Are we surprised? The answer is no. And the sad reality is people are going to be harmed in this whole process, which is why when I saw this report over at the Center for American Progress on the fact that the Trump administration has made 36 million workers newly vulnerable to discrimination and harassment, I said we got to get its author on the program. And Sarah Estep is the author and economist there with the Women's Initiative at the Center for American Progress. You want to check out their work, AmericanProgress.org. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me on.
So as I get it, as I'm reading through this report and I'm seeing what this administration's doing, not only are we making patronage great again, we're making discrimination great again.
Yeah. So, I mean, the administration has been basically firing a whole bunch of people that had protected workers. They are in the process of completely destroying an agency that protected the 1 in 5 people that worked for a private company that got government contracts. So that's our federal dollars, our tax dollars going to federal contracts. And we used to hold them to a higher standard when it came to discrimination and harassment. And now those 1 in 5 workers are potentially vulnerable to more discrimination as a result of the Trump administration's actions.
Now, this isn't favoritism. This isn't giving them a preferred status. This is just treating people equal. This is just making sure that you know, in order for you to get a job, well, you know, you need to go a little extra. That we're not talking about. We're not talking about that. We're talking about just treating people all the same, right?
Yes, making sure everyone has the same opportunities when they apply to jobs, when they're getting promoted within the organization that they're in, including private businesses, making sure that, you know, you're not discriminating against a certain race or gender group, religious group, even. That's also covered by this. Those are all things that I feel like we should pretty universally hope that people receiving our tax dollars, corporations receiving our tax dollars, aren't doing. That feels pretty universally true, but apparently it's not.
So how are they going about this? Look, understand, this administration is not going to be all warm and fuzzy to a lot of groups, especially minority groups or LGBTQ or trans groups. They've been very hostile all throughout, you know, their entire campaign and the last administration. So I'm not shocked by any of this, but you know, how are they going about it? What mechanisms are they using? Clearly they're firing everyone they can in government to gut it and to privatize it. How specifically are they going after and targeting this group that you're talking about?
Yeah. So for federal contractors specifically, what they've done for the Office of Federal Contractor Compliance Programs, which I will refer to as the OFCCP from here on out, what they've done is they've repealed this Johnson-era executive order that basically said the OFCCP has the right to review the full payroll, hiring processes, et cetera, of private contractors that are receiving government funds and ensure that they aren't committing some kind of discrimination and harassment on the basis of sex, race, several other protected classes. And, you know, we as taxpayers deserve them to be held to a higher standard and we should have a higher level of, I suppose, a higher view into what they're hiring processes look like.
Right. So what you're saying, by Johnson, you mean Lyndon Johnson? Because
yes.
There are some people who may not know. You know, Johnson era, I've never heard of such a thing. We're talking about, and this is how long ago?
This was the 1960s.
Yeah, 1965 was a long, long time ago. In fact, before I was born. So a lot of us, this has been in place all of our lives and then some. So it's so radical and it's so extreme. And it's so important that we have to undo this now.
Yeah. I mean, I used a few examples in my study that I think highlighted the fact that the OFCCP protects everyone. It's not just women or just Black folks. It's literally everyone. So like one example I used was Boeing. They had a subsidiary that was in its hiring process favoring Hispanic applicants. And as a part of that process, they found out that like they needed to hire on about 11 Black and white employees. And so I just thought that was kind of an interesting case to show to people that like, hey, it's not just one group of people they're favoring. They're trying to make sure that everyone has the same opportunity in the workplace.
Yeah, you know, I think we all wish we were in that place where you were, you know, the Martin Luther King thing, not judged by the color of your skin, but by your character and by your skills and your ability. I think we all want to be in that place, but the sad reality is we're not. And discrimination is real. So having some bit of you know, cop on the beat, somebody, you know, looking over someone's shoulder occasionally doesn't seem to me to be a bad thing, and has never really been that big of a thing until obviously now, I guess. Why now? Yeah. Why was this different than it was during the Biden years, or the first Trump years, or the Obama years, or the H.W. Bush years, or the Clinton years, or go back, the H.W. Bush years or the Reagan years? Why now? Why is this happening now, do you think?
I think it speaks to the way that the administration wants to empower corporations at the expense of workers. For example, one person who benefited from these policies was the owner of Tesla, who heard about in the news.
Yeah, Doge Boy. Yeah.
No, yeah.
You don't spend $280 million to get somebody elected president without understanding that there's something in it for him. And you're going to tell me partially what's in it for him.
And so Tesla was being audited, for example, by the OFCCP.
No.
Shockingly. And that audit stopped, obviously, once this executive order went into place. And so far, I haven't read any reporting that audit has restarted for any reason. And then on top of that, it was recently announced that DOGE had recommended staffing cuts to the OFCCP. So we're talking 90% staffing cuts. Yeah. So even if this is litigated in the courts, I'm not a labor lawyer, but I expect this will be litigated. Even if it is litigated, if you have the agency operating with 10% of the workforce it once had, like, they're just not going to be able to be as powerful.
No, you knocked all the teeth out of the dog.
Yeah. So, I'm a bit concerned about that. You know, the OFCCP it's helped workers get back jobs they deserved, and it's helped with settlement money for all of those workers who were discriminated against. It's gotten them back millions of dollars. Again, it's 36 million workers that the OFCCP protects. That's not a small share of people. Like, right. Most people are like, how does the OFCCP affect me? Probably because they've never heard of this agency, right? But it's 1 in 5 workers that are protected by them. So even if you aren't working for an agency a corporation that gets government contracts, you probably know someone that does. Your aunt probably does, your brother might. Like, this protects people you know, right?
And for me, Sarah, you know, the important part that we're in is this is a great opportunity to educate people about what government actually does and what it is. It's one thing to hear someone on the radio bloviating about waste, fraud, and abuse, and you're bad. It's one thing to hear that. But when it does filter down to how it affects you and your family and your neighbors, I think this is a great opportunity to educate a bit, because I didn't know about the specific agency. I knew that there was an organization that set limits on you know, how exploitative employers can be with federal contracts. We set minimum wage levels and maximum hour laws and all that kind of stuff. And that's great. We need more of that.
But, you know, you talk about these other things, you know, the discrimination and the harassment and all that. It adds another layer to it. And it makes me go back to what I believe this administration really, in the big picture, is all about. And that is swinging the pendulum all the way to the side of people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and those folks, and giving workers no recourse for when Dear Leader and the Gilded Age, our Gilded Age robber barons, exact their will on us and give us no recourse and the ability to fight back.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even just in the example I used of the Boeing subsidiary, I went and looked at Boeing's revenues from the last decade or so, and I found that roughly they've been falling between 65 and 75 billion over the last several years. And so since we know that Boeing consistently gets about 30% of its revenues from government contracts, that means the government alone is paying about $20 billion federal dollars per year to Boeing alone to do work on their behalf. And so shouldn't we want to hold them to a certain standard when it comes to discrimination and harassment? I mean, a lot of the times, like, it's not this really obvious kind of discrimination. It's happening as companies are promoting and hiring. They may not even realize that they've done some kind of discriminatory thing. So that's why the OFCCP is so important. And even though discrimination is illegal at a federal level, like, no matter what, on the basis of sex and race, if you are an employee of, let's say, Boeing, I keep using that example, if you're an employee of Boeing and you don't have full access to their salary information, how are you going to know that you've been structurally discriminated against? You know, like, these aren't things you can just take to the EEOC if you don't have that kind of information at your fingertips. That's kind of what the OFCCP did. They went in and they found these kinds of structural problems that were going on within companies. And I think that's really important to point out.
No, and it's important to point out that the fact that this administration is doing everything they can do to crush all data collection. So the first part of allowing this stuff to go on is pretending like you don't think there's a problem or know there's a problem, because we just didn't have the information. And that's part of this as well, I think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's definitely an information problem. I mean, I was trying to find out which contracts before this interview had been debarred recently. So the OFCCP has this unique power to debar federal contractors, which basically just means they can't get more money from the federal government if they're doing bad things.
There are consequences.
Which makes sense. I went online to try to find, you know, some examples for this interview, and they had pulled down the whole page that it was gone. So I just want to emphasize that this information is actively being removed from government websites, which is really scary. We're allowing these companies to potentially continue receiving federal funds who are known to be discriminatory.
And you got to wonder how many of those made contributions. And, you know, again, this seems like, you know, my grandfather always said, if a rich guy takes a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. Because they understand return on investment. So when I see rich people spending a lot of money to take over government and then do things like this, it kind of makes me go, you know, maybe we should be doing something to kind of take this back. So last line of question that I've got for you, you know, as this stuff gets worse, and it will, as the discrimination and the harassment ramp up, and it will, you know, what are people to do? I've been saying that, you know, the solutions will come out of our future suffering. Their savagery will bring us together, and we will organize around that. But what are you thinking we should be doing?
I mean, in my opinion, given DOJ's plans to cut OFCCP enforcement, the fact that we've basically gutted this agency at this point, I would recommend that people talk to their colleagues and just try to get a sense of what's going on in terms of, like, pay and everything like that. Have conversations with your coworkers. if you think something bad is going on, no, you still have the right to report that to the EEOC. You discrimination is still illegal. Right. Like, it's a lot harder to do this on our own, but I mean, that's kind of where we're at now.
No, this is that's the right answer. Look, us coming together, us being a mutual aid society, us organizing around caring for each other. And I hope this brings us a little more militancy in the workplace. See people unionizing, fighting for better wages, hours, yeah. Contracts that lay this stuff out. I think that's the way forward. In a way, as they continue, as they do this stuff, I think it's your only way. But Sarah, I appreciate the work you guys do over there at the Center for American Progress. Hope folks will take a look at your latest report on the administration and how they've made 36 million workers newly vulnerable. We'll get links out on social media. ESTEP, thanks so much for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Are you okay with this? Is it what we signed up for? Did they run on this during the campaign? And did you read Project 2025? Rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Clouds lingering, flurries and breezy this evening, then a clearing sky with the wind dying down overnight. A low in the upper teens. For tomorrow, sunshine returns. High temperatures in the upper 30s. On Friday, mostly sunny and mid-30s. It's 24 right now.
When a parent sees their child smile, they see hope. Aleem hoped that his son Rajib would have an easier life than he had. You see, Rajib, just like his father, was born with a cleft. But thanks to Smile Train, both father and son received free, life-changing surgeries, transforming their smiles into symbols of hope. To learn more and support the global cleft community, visit smiletrain.org/learn. Smile Train, changing the world one smile at a time.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember last year got into a little dust-up with Teamsters president Sean O'Brien over his, well, the thumbs-up picture at Mag-a-Lago, then obviously the speech at the RNC, had an encounter in Hershey that, could have gone who knows which kind of ways here in Pennsylvania. And, tense. But I've said, look, I don't think cozying up to wannabe dictators and people who have a track record of attacking labor, I don't know that's a great thing. But he's the president. He's moving in that direction, and he's moving my union in that direction. So when Donald Trump put forth Lori Chavez Dreamer as the Secretary of Labor, I came out and fully acknowledged that this is what Sean O'Brien got for all of that. Call it what it is, loyalty, tacit endorsement, whatever. I said, look, this is O'Brien's baby. DeRemer is his 110%. It's at his door. And I got flack from the other side. I said, look, it's not going to age well. The picture of O'Brien, DeRemer, and Trump not going to age well, because she's going to do all the horrible stuff that Trump wants done, even with O'Brien's loyalty. And here to share some thoughts on how that's working out thus far and maybe where it goes from here. And does she get confirmed? I've asked Alex Wehan to come talk with us. Alex is a editorial fellow at Mother Jones. He's got a piece out right now. Trump's new labor secretary is a fig leaf for his war on workers. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start with... Do you agree? Do you agree that 110%, as I have given Sean O'Brien credit for, that the only reason Lori Chavez DeRemer is the nominee is because of O'Brien's overtures and his attempt to cozy up to Republicans?
Yeah, there's certainly reports of that. I think the Wall Street Journal report was pretty explicit on that. But this is a big movement of a lot of Republicans trying to court pro-labor stuff. You have Josh Hawley, you have J.D. Vance. If you look at the UAW strikes, they were talking about trying to support that. So this is just like a part of what's been the Republican Party has been trying to do recently in terms of Trump's new administration, in terms of pushing Lori Chavez to remarry.
Yeah, but for those of us who watched the hearing that just happened,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. And again, the words are great. You know, I listened to, you know, to O'Brien talk about Josh Hawley, and I've heard his spin on how he educated Josh Hawley and changed his position on right to work to where he claims Josh Hawley didn't know. And because he's such a good, you know, negotiator and educator, Josh's heart changed or something. And now isn't anti-right to work. I'm not sure what he is now, but there was a process. I'm curious. Her words during her hearing. Any hope?
No, not looking like it. So the big thing that she was kind of marketed as was a pro-labor Republican. And a lot of people pointed to her support for the PRO Act. And that has a lot to do with the right to work stuff you were just mentioning. And I believe the quote was something, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, she basically regretted supporting or co-sponsoring the PRO Act. When Rand Paul questioned her and was asking, like, do you support the right to work aspect of the PRO Act? And she was like, it's an imperfect bill, but I just did it to have a seat at the table in these labor conversations.
Right.
So, like, she spun it in a way that it's like, I am just doing this because I want to be in the conversation and not I'm actually supporting the pro-labor kind of part of the PRO Act.
Right. So my mind, Alex, went to, because she said two things. She said that the only reason she sponsored it is because she's representing her district. This isn't about her, that she was a different person representing her district and she wanted to have a seat at the table. And my mind went to, she wanted to have a seat at the table, not to make it better, but to water it down, because as a business person that she is, daddy may have been a Teamster and daddy may have put food on the table and a roof on her head and clothes on her back with Teamster wages and benefits, but she's a business person now. So my thought was more of the along the lines of, hey, I got to sit at the table because we got to water some of this stuff down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly right. I mean, that's like what a lot of officials are hoping that she is going to be, like this kind of weird branch between the employer and the worker. But obviously, like what we heard in this hearing, it's like she's saying that she'll just follow the Trump administration and she'll like say lines in terms of like what's happening with the dismantling of the federal government of like, I do not believe the president is going to ask me to violate the law. Like that's pretty explicit in terms of what's been happening with the NLRB and stuff like that. So kind of like pushing that narrative, the Republicans have been trying to do that. Lori Chavez de Rima herself has been trying to do that. But yeah, like kind of what you were saying, it's not really going to work because she basically said she wasn't going to do that during the confirmation hearing.
No, as I said, when I gave O'Brien credit for this, and look, I don't want to dust up another fight with him and end up, you know, being, you know, nose to nose again, because it's frivolous. But I do think it's a huge mistake tactically, because I don't think she's going to be any better than anyone else. And some are like, well, you know, of the choices, she's the best. And I was one of those saying, of the choices, yeah, she wasn't, you know, she wasn't absolutely the worst choice, probably the best choice of the worst person making the choice, but still really, really bad. And, you know, just to tick through some of the things that she said that she supported, you know, the number one priority for the Teamsters right now should be holding on to that joint employer rule that will allow them to organize Amazon package drivers. And she was full-throated in overturning that the first time around. The independent contractor rule, she was full-throated on going the wrong way on that. Right to work, full-throated on the wrong way with that. So it just seems to me that everything that labor would want and need to be able to organize members, to represent members, to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions, this woman is on the wrong side of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, like, she even went so far as, like, to not be able to commit to saying that $7.25 an hour for the federal minimum wage was so low. Like, there was Andy Kim asking here about that during the confirmation hearing, also about like having paid leave. Like, there's so many examples that we can say in terms of like how she's not this hope that a lot of Dems and even a lot of Republicans are putting into her. So yeah, I definitely get that, what you're saying.
So let me walk through this where my mind is going now, because I've taken the position, look, the Trump administration is going to be horrible top to bottom. They wrote it down on paper. We have seen Project 2025, and it is the playbook that Tim Walz said it was going to be, and they drew it up and they are going after it. And for me, there's going to be a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of turmoil in the coming years. And there's going to be an opportunity for people to organize around the suffering, and the solution should come out of that. I see labor being part of this. I see a government that is hostile to organized labor. I see a government that is hostile to enforcing labor laws. I see a government that is fully on the side of the CEO class, because that's who's running it. I believe things are going to get bad. And out of that, you know, maybe we will then see that resurgence of militancy of working class people, much like we saw in the 20s into the 30s that brought us the National Labor Relations Act, which was a peace treaty to get workers and employers back together. You know, maybe we have to live through the Hoover administration to get to the FDR again. You have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, taking that historical approach is definitely interesting. Like, I was looking at numbers in terms of like when the peak of union membership was, like during the mid 1900s, like 1950s and so on.
1965, I believe, was the height.
1965, yeah.
35%.
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
No. All I'm asking is, you know, we had to go through some really bad times. We went through the Great Depression. There was all the organizing in the 10s and the 20s and the 30s to get to the point to where we, you know, government finally said, we got to put something in the law to give workers the ability to organize and to do it actively. The National Labor Relations Act was a peace treaty. My grandparents' generation were ripping this country apart. Things were going boom. Things were on fire. People were beating each other in the streets to get better wages, hours, and conditions. And the government said, hey, this isn't good for business. It's not good for the Depression. We need to get people a way to come together and talk. And they waited it to give workers a little bit more power, because they understood the employers had all the power. So if we don't have that activist government, that government that's encouraging collective bargaining, and we've got it that's gone the other way, which I believe the Trump administration will be, and is, maybe this brings some bit of militancy back to the workers of this country, where we start thinking about class consciousness again.
Yeah, like, I can definitely see that perspective. I guess where I kind of see like this, where is the future of labor? There's kind of like two kind of aspects I see. Like, there's a lot of that opportunistic collaboration with Trump. Like, we were talking about Sean O'Brien and stuff like that. And then there's like this other long-term deep class unity that you can have in terms of what you're talking about. Does that return to a working class militancy? And I think a lot of where that comes, where that can come from, is how you build like that class unity. Because like, I see a lot of these attempts from Republicans, the MAGA movement, whatever, in terms of like trying to divide your labor workforce. So whether that be through immigrant workers or something like that, there has to be some solidarity between your native-born workers, your immigrant workers, and that is where you're going to find that militancy, where you're having kind of that solidarity between across the border. Like, you're hearing a lot of stuff from people like Sean O'Brien, and then also Lori Chavez-Remer, when she was talking about whether she felt that immigration was a threat to the workers. And that kind of narrative is kind of what you're seeing in terms of trying to reduce that militancy that you're talking about. But in order to kind of restore that, in terms of looking back at a historical perspective, you had examples like in the 30s where there was a lot of like strikes within agriculture, in California specifically, I believe. So yeah, there's a lot that can be done in terms of solidarity between kind of different groups. But yeah, it's going to be bad before it gets better.
No, and that's unfortunately where we have to go. And look, I understand the O'Brien approach. I get it conceptually. My problem is that Trump and his acolytes, they're not doing anything. There are no actions that go along with whatever words are being spoken. All the bad stuff is still going to happen. The pendulum is still swinging further to the side of corporate interest. And this is why I keep asking my MAGA friends, explain to me what has Josh Hawley, J.D. Vance, what has Roger Marshall, what has any of these Republicans actually done? What vote have they cast? What legislation have they moved forward? And the answer is crickets, because there is none. There could be, oh, let's take a picture, Sean, and hey, come to our parties, and we'll take pictures and smile. But there's no actual legislation. There's no actual path forward to make lives better. It's still just the death of 1,000 paper cuts.
Right. Yeah. Like, I see a lot of that funneling of kind of working class anger, and they're trying to like push it towards their goals. Like, and I think the big thing that I've noticed is like the creation of imaginary enemies. Like I mentioned the UAW strike before, that was Democrats pushing electric vehicles. But I guess like the actual argument is, okay, electric vehicles are not bad on its face, but then what Biden pushed with his funding was there is no union support to back that up. So you're kind of leaving everyone behind in that. And then same with another fake enemy you can say is immigrants, like we were talking about before. There's some sort of way that they need to funnel this anger, this dissatisfaction. And what you were saying, they're not doing it through bills, through actual legislation that makes a difference. They're doing it through, let's just funnel anger and point fingers at a different group that are more vulnerable. And that's how it's done.
And look, the way they can get away with this, and the reason that they're getting away with it, and the reason that O'Brien's able to, you know, to take that position, is Democrats haven't been great over the last 40 years. I'll be the first one to tell you, Democrats have fallen down on the job of protecting working class voters and going after legislation that would make lives better. Look, you go back to Carter, who said we were going to overturn Taft-Hartley. They didn't. You go to Clinton, who said we were going to get strike replacement. Didn't. You know, Obama shook my hand twice and said we were getting something better than the Employee Free Choice Act. Didn't. You know, this is one of those things where you go, you gotta have some receipts to show people you at least put on the gloves and fought a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly true. And like, it's kind of like, where do you kind of go if your government doesn't see where your goals are, or doesn't align with, or doesn't even seem to like care about what your values are, or what your goals are.
Yep.
So yeah, I definitely get that. And like, kind of what I see is like, the working class struggle is like, they are united in terms of not being, they're not the ones who are really scared of the businesses. I kind of think and view it as it's the Democrats, it's your government leaders who are afraid to go against business. And if you kind of like build a coalition that kind of stands together in that, then that's when you will actually see progress being made.
No, look, the reality is that I've been saying this for a very long time. The anger is very real. The working class anger is extraordinarily real. Everyone feels it who punches a clock, and at the end of the week, the check doesn't go far enough. It's real. It's just that one is doing a really great sales job and has no ideas, and the other one has some ideas and just isn't out there. They're doing much. And the sad reality is, you know, you throw a drowning man an anchor, he's going to reach for it. And I think, sadly, that's where we are as labor is looking to Trump as potentially. I still can't believe O'Brien thinks that the Republicans will move on a PRO Act type piece of legislation. But, you know, maybe that's why I'm in this chair and he's where he's at. Last line of questioning I've got for you. What kind of response have you gotten to this? Because I have a lot of labor friends who are hopeful that DeRemer is going to be the savior of the movement and not be as hostile. Have you gotten any kind of interesting response?
Yeah, there's definitely uncertainty. I mean, like, I was just looking at what Sean O'Brien said after the confirmation hearing. He went on Fox News and said it was like an uncertain future. Like, he didn't support Lori Chavez DeRemer talking about right to work laws, but then he said he would kind of work together with people like Josh Hawley to kind of remove that from a new PRO Act. I've also talked to a bunch of people in terms of the firing of the NLRB. they are losing contact with a lot of workers, and they're basically frozen out without the full board being available. And you can kind of see that Trump is going to probably appoint a full Republican board and replace those three members, I believe it is now. So yeah, like there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of people that are trying to get things done and they're trying to do work, especially like a lot of the federal workers that are still within the NLRB who are not on the board and are trying to do work and help unions. But yeah, like it's just really uncertain for the people I've talked to.
Yeah, it's an interesting gamble. We'll see if it pays off. I can't say if it will or it won't. I know if I were a betting man, which side I'd put my money on, but we will see. But Alex, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Great piece. Hope folks will check out the work over at Mother Jones.
Thanks so much, Rick.
Alex Wien, editorial fellow there at Mother Jones. You can check out his work, motherjones.org. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you think maybe she's going to be less bad? Do you think she's going to be helpful? I want to hear it. Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1770. That was the day of the Boston Massacre, when the first shots of the American Revolution were fired. But did you know that the massacre happened in part because of a dispute over jobs? In 1767, the British had passed the Townshend Revenue Act. It levied import taxes on goods such as tea, lead, paint, paper, and glass. Colonists were required to purchase these items from the British. The aim was to raise money to pay for the salaries of government officials in the colonies. The colonists resented the taxes and organized boycotts against the goods. Boston was at the heart of the dissent. In response, the British moved their soldiers into port cities to see the enforcement of the law. This angered the colonists even further. British soldiers tried to find part-time work since they earned poor wages for their service. This put the soldiers in direct competition with the tradesmen in Boston. Things came to a head when a brawl broke out between a group of colonist rope makers and British soldiers. 3 days later, about 50 colonists taunted the sentry at the custom house and pelted him with snowballs. More soldiers rushed to the scene. A soldier shot into the crowd. It's believed by accident. A volley of shots then rang out. Five protesters fell dead. One was a rope maker by the name of Samuel Gray. Another was an African-American man named Crispus Attucks. The British attempted to appease the colonists by repealing all of the import taxes except the one on tea. But this reversal came too late. The shots had been fired that began the march to revolution. Labor History in Two brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's going to be interesting on Thursday to see how many Democrats actually get on the Lori Chavez Dreamer bandwagon. And look, I think there are going to be quite a few. I think there will be a number of them to throw support behind her because, look, the Teamsters are putting probably the most political capital, the most political muscle behind her nomination than I've ever seen. It's quite remarkable. I have never seen the Teamsters Union put this kind of shoulder into getting someone into one of these positions. And what's interesting, and you know, quite frankly, what's interesting to me is that I don't know that it's going to benefit them. You know, as I said, when the picture came out of Teamsters President Sean O'Brien and Lori Chavez Dreamer and Donald Trump, you know, doing their thing, I said, look, this isn't going to age well. You know, I gave President O'Brien credit. You know, this is what you got for what you did. This is the quid pro quo. I hope she is everything that you think it is. I hope we get someone to lead the Department of Labor who cares about labor. I'll be honest, and as I talked with Alex Wien, the reality is I didn't see that in that first hearing. I didn't see that concern for labor that you would expect. I didn't see the support. when someone says, I only signed on to the PRO Act because I wanted the seat at the table and I was just representing my members, it's not what I really believe. I don't know. I don't know if that's somebody that I think is up for any task, to be honest. It is someone who does fit into the kind of Donald Trump mold. Because I've said before, I don't think Trump has any true ideological leanings. I don't believe that he is, you know, hardcore ideologue. I think the people he surrounded himself are, and I think they are pushing him in that direction. I think he just wants to be liked. I think he's got an ego problem. I think he just wants people to say nice things about him, give him things. And this whole thing with Zelensky has kind of highlighted that. And I forget, I don't know who said it. But he said, look, if Zelensky played his cards right, what he should have done is he should have made up, you know, like a fancy medal and give, hey, this is the highest medal we give to Ukrainian, you know, heroes, and made a big deal about how wonderful Donald Trump is, because that's what he wants. That's what plays. Whether it's right or wrong, whether it's beneficial to this country or not, doesn't matter. It's always been transactional on how it makes him feel and if he benefits from it. And I think Democrats had probably, and maybe this is O'Brien. Look, I'm trying to give O'Brien, Sean O'Brien, the Teamsters president, the benefit of the doubt. I'm trying to find the light at the end of this tunnel, and yet I keep seeing, well, the hearing. You know, there was nothing in her testimony that would have given me any hope that she was going to be anything but a Republican labor secretary. And you go, well, what's wrong with that? Well, if you look at the last couple, they have not been great. They have done everything they can do to put more obstacles in the way of workers organizing. They have put everything in their way to put more obstacles in the way of workers to fight for their rights. And they've created environments that make it harder for people. The pendulum under Republican rule swings towards corporate interests, towards the moneyed interests, and away from workers being able to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. You know, the reality is, in this country, when we had a strong labor movement, when union density was at its highest, you go back to 1965, it was 35%. That was the height of the labor movement. You had a massive middle class. You had people who, with one income, could support a family very well, put cars in the driveway, a house and a roof over their heads, college for the kids. Things were distributed in a much different way. And why? A big part of this, we taxed the you-know-what out of the very wealthy, and they ended up giving it to workers in higher wages and benefits. And what they didn't give to workers for their wealth creation, government took and redistributed through education and healthcare and all the other things that came about. We don't do that anymore. We tell rich people, oh, here's more. Oh, you want more? How much more would you like? Oh, we're not even going to ask you how much you want. We're just going to give it all to you. And then we wonder why working people are struggling. We wonder why two incomes doesn't support a family anymore. You're wondering why they're talking about gutting child labor laws and putting kids back into dangerous jobs. Because they got to compete with mom and dad to keep food on the table. So to think that a Republican, a Trump Republican for that matter, is going to be the savior of labor is just ludicrous. The fact that J.D. Vance and Josh Hawley and the rest of them talk like they want to reach a hand out but never put anything down on paper should be one of those things that every working person questions. Don't tell me, show me. Democrats have put down on paper. Republicans have blocked it. I've been asking for 20 years. Show me one piece of legislation Republicans have put forth that had benefited the working class solely. One thing that they've put their name on it and put on a table. One thing that they've gone and they've voted on that has been passed. One thing. That's all I want. Just one thing. There's nothing. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind. That's where you go. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Department of Veterans Affairs is looking to cut 80,000 jobs. CBS's Michael Wallace with details.
The VA has 479,000 employees. And an internal memo, its chief of staff says that number needs to get below 400,000 with the help of DOGE. Those cuts would wipe out the Biden administration's expansion of the VA in recent years.
More than 25% of its workforce are veterans. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries.
Thousands of veterans across the country have been hurt by the extreme actions of Donald Trump, the Trump administration, Elon Musk, and MAGA Republicans. That's unacceptable.
President Trump is allowing a one-month pause for the big three automakers in his new tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico. CBS's Linda Kenyon has the latest.
It applies to cars and parts from Mexico and Canada. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt says, yes, President Trump loves tariffs.
He said it.